Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking, a mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello and welcome to this episode of The Hacker Factory. I'm your host, Philip Wiley. I refer to myself as the Hacker Maker because I teach and mentor aspiring pen testers. This show is an extension of those efforts, which are my passions. And each episode, I'll introduce you to a new hacker or penetration tester, and hopefully you can learn from their stories and inspire you to get started as a pen tester or help you in your career. And today, I'm honored to have Hazy with us. I know Hazy from social media, from InfoSec Twitter. We follow each other for a while, and so it's an honor to have her on the show. Welcome to the show, Hazy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So how's your day going?
My day is going great. It's going great. I'm glad to finally meet you. And I'm very excited to be a guest on your podcast.
Yeah, good to finally meet you too, virtually. And hopefully one of these days, whenever things get safe and the pandemic's under control, we can actually meet in person.
Yes. There are quite a few people that I've met on social media that I definitely would like to meet in person. And I think we're almost there.
I actually only got to meet two people last year, Joe Vest at some SpectroOps training I was taking, and then also Mags from InfoSec Twitter. I met her, at the ICS Summit last year. So I got lucky enough to meet two people, I met another person that was following me on Twitter at SpectroOps, the SpectroOps conference. And a funny coincidence, in that conference, a guy that ended up becoming my coworker, and a weird coincidence about this, he was from India. And so he was in the Virginia area for the SpectroOps Red Team training. And he ended up interviewing for a spot on our team in our India office. And it was crazy. We're at the same place. We didn't actually meet. We kind of remember seeing each other, but that was the extent of it. So,
oh, that's nice. A small world, right?
It is. It's amazing how small the world is. And you run into people that you never would expect, especially, you know, he was here from India. So why don't you share with our audience, since they're not probably as familiar with you like as I am, or maybe they know of you, but could you share about your background with our audience?
Okay. My background, as far as how I got into pen testing or before I got into pen testing?
Yeah, kind of both, because it's kind of good to get that background because people get understanding, okay, they knew this before they started. So,
okay. I fall into the category of a career switcher. So prior to getting into pen testing, I actually had, I wore a few different hats and I had a couple of different titles, but I originally started as an esthetician in a spa. And that was my first career. And I worked my way up to working for dermatologists and then learning lasers and being a laser technician for some physicians. And then eventually I spent quite a bit of time at a medical facility that offered a lot of different services. So I was a medical assistant for their dermatology department. I was their laser technician and also part of their spa. So I did that for a long time. I actually did that for quite some time. I have a relative at some point asked me to go to a local information security conference with them. And this was back in 2013. And I said, okay, well, we'll give it a shot. I don't know if there's anything that would be of interest to me. I don't know much about it. And of course, you know, my relative is in the profession. So I go and the local security conference here that I went to, my first one was called ShmooCon, which is in the Washington, D.C. area. And I enjoyed it so much. that we decided to go to DEF CON the same year. And it was a whole different world for me. And there were the material was fascinating, first because I didn't even know half of it was possible. I didn't understand a lot of the concepts, but the fact that these things were possible and looking at watching people in the talks and some of the workshops, I wanted to know more. I wanted to know more. I had these really simple questions like, how can you capture wireless traffic? How is that possible? You mean my own phone? That this is a problem if I come here and I leave my wireless on? So I was also at a time where, because I had been working in my profession for so long, that I fell out of love with it. I wasn't enjoying it as much as I did in the past. And I was looking for growth. I was looking for a challenge. I was looking for more to do. And so I went back to school. I had the opportunity to go back to school. And I thought, why not? Why don't I take a couple of these tech classes and see if one, I can even pass the class if I'm any good at it, and two, if I still find it interesting. So I took a few college courses, and I did find some of it interesting. Luckily, I passed. I didn't fail my classes. And I thought, okay, well, what I really want to get into, I really want to get into the meat of this. I have a few more classes I need to take. So I kept taking more classes. And then eventually I decided to go for a network administration degree due to my lack of prior knowledge, due to my lack of experience. But I know I really wanted to get into cybersecurity. So I decided to complete two associate's degrees at the same time. And I also managed to stay on the dean's list, which was more of a personal challenge to see if I could really grasp this material and going back to school later on, if this was something that I could accomplish. And it was I got both degrees and I switched careers. My last semester while I was in school, I also started, the last year, excuse me, I also started volunteering because I wanted to get more involved in the community and I wasn't quite sure how. So because I'd already been going to some of the conferences, I noticed that there was an open call for volunteers in 2016 for the Crypto Privacy Village at DEF CON. And so I wasn't sure if it was something I could do, but I saw an open call and I messaged the point of contact and I said, well, what do you need to know? And is it something I can do? And they said, oh yeah, anybody can do it. We need a body. And if you want to be at this time in this place, if you're going to the conference, then you can help us out. And so that was my first experience volunteering and trying to get more involved. My last semester in school in 2017, I had an internship. And so the internship was primarily for, tech support, doing some tech refreshes and replacing old parts and doing minor Active Directory, asset management and so forth. And because I kept saying how much I was interested in information security, the CISO allowed me to shadow their information security team as well. So part of the time I was allowed to do that, which was great. As far as getting my foot in the door, a friend I had met at one of the conferences the year before I graduated. We had already been chit-chatting online, and eventually they reached out to me and messaged me and asked if I was looking for work. And I was at the time. So, my end of my internship, and I was applying for, entry level network admin, system admin roles. Because I assumed that's where I needed to start if I wanted to work my way up into cybersecurity, into more of a security analyst role. And my friend says, well, this happens to be for a penetration tester role. And I thought to myself, well, I don't know if I'm qualified for this. And I did, and I sat on it for a few days and I said, I need to think about this. And, you know, I deliberated and I thought this would be insane if I try to apply for this job. You know, I don't have a lot of experience. And then I got out of that mindset and I told myself, well, what's the worst that can happen is they tell me no.
Yeah.
You know, I would kick myself if I don't apply for this job. Why wouldn't I? So I did. I submitted my resume. So I applied for the job. I had a phone interview. After the phone interview, they asked me to come in for a face-to-face interview. The face-to-face interview was a hands-on lab that I wasn't prepared for, but I passed that as well. And I also had to write a research paper because I was so inexperienced and so junior. And it was enough for them to want to bring me onto the team. So that was my foot in the door, and that's how I got into penetration testing. So, you know, now I just reached 4 years. So I've been in the same team for 4 years. I do a lot of the white box assessments, but I also get to occasionally participate in some red team engagements because I am on a red team. So I get to have the fortune of doing a little bit of lots of things on the team. So it was a great opportunity. That's my story.
That's a good story. And that's good information for our listeners. You know, that you were in another field into it a good amount of time and you're able to switch and you didn't have that kind of background and you picked it up, and a good lesson on taking a chance. That was like my first pen test job. I'd had vulnerability scanning experience, worked in AppSec and had a sysadmin background, but I didn't have the pen testing experience, and luckily someone took a chance on me. But you know, it's like you said, if you don't apply for it, you can't get it. So that's a great story. And didn't you recently get promoted to senior?
I did.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just got promoted. So yeah, I'm now officially a senior on the team.
Sounds like a really good company to work for, the fact that they're giving people a chance for one thing. And that's interesting. That's good that you passed the challenge, because I know, you know, for our listeners that aren't familiar with it, some companies will have like a VM or an environment you have to go and perform a pen test on, or like a CTF type challenge. So was that kind of the case with you? You had like a vulnerable VM or a CTF type challenge that you had to do?
It was a small lab, and it was a CTF type of challenge where where I am, and I know each team may look for different things when they're interviewing candidates. Where I am, we are looking for people that can problem solve. You know, it isn't necessarily, you know, we take into consideration the level of skill that they have, the role that they're applying for, if they are able to communicate or think out loud, and how they approach the problem. So yeah, it was asking the right questions if I didn't know the answer, thinking out loud and figuring out how I could solve these challenges, and then, you know, being able to perform some of the very basics on, you know, how do you do a scan, and how are you able to, if you can't, to, you know, perform this exploit, what would you do? What do you think you could do? And so yeah, it was great opportunity to be recognized for other potential and the ability to grow.
Well, that's great. That's good. I really like to see places where people are promoting people as well, you know, because a lot of times, especially your entry into the job, sometimes some places are not really good at promoting and that sort of thing. So that's great to see that you're getting promoted in your workplace. Like I said, it sounds like a good place that they're giving, you know, entry-level people a shot and letting you go and improve yourself. And just instead of saying you don't have 10 years worth of experience and not talking to you. So that's great. So as far as, you know, if someone's wanting to get started, what kind of recommendations would you have for someone wanting to become a pen tester?
Okay. For pen testing specifically, I would say at this point, embrace the basics. I can't emphasize that enough, actually. I have the opportunity to sit with some of my teammates when we interview candidates, and my team has grown also. So I do get the benefit to see certain, skill sets and knowledge levels from, you know, mediums, from mids to seniors to SMEs and so forth on the technical side. And I would say embrace the basics. Whether you have that piece of paper, whether you have the degree or not, whether you're self-taught, regardless, I think that is one of the crucial things to get your foot in the door, because when you go in, you want to pass that interview. There is no, the only, it's nice to be able to perform a lot of the more experienced and the more challenging aspects of hacking a box and cracking passwords. But if you don't understand some of the simple things of networking, of, you know, some of the basic ports that are vulnerable, that aren't secure, even those simple things, you'd be amazed. So understand those concepts and, you know, be open to being trainable. And you may be surprised who recognizes those things. So that's one of the pieces of advice I have. The other thing is, what are your strengths? You know, for me, for example, and I would say in any profession, not just breaking into penetration testing and information security, I would say any type of role that you're wanting to get into, understand what it is that you can bring to the table. And I think it's quite a challenge for people to say, okay, well, if I don't have the experience, how am I going to get hired? And it's that cycle. And that's with any industry. What skills do you offer, whether they were acquired or whether they're just a talent, natural talent of yours, that might be lacking in peers, or something that you can offer to a team or an organization? And I would say, if your list of skills, even if it's a technical role, if your list of skills is limited to strictly just your technical acumen, then it's not enough. In my opinion, I would say not enough. What else? Add on to that. What are other things that, you know, someone else can do? Like me, for example, because I was not strong in my technical skills at the time when I got my job, I had other strengths and I had to dig deep to figure out what they were, because I was so comfortable in my prior career on getting hired because my work spoke for itself. So having the customer service skills that I had, being able to communicate with people verbally, but also written, paid attention to details. Apparently, I'm much stronger in writing than, I won't say everyone, I'm not a technical writer, but I'm much stronger in writing, and that showed through in the report, in the paper I submitted in my interview. And that was one of the hooks that got me the job.
Well, that's great. So as far as like things like CTFs or hack the box, do you think that's important for people that are wanting to get into pen testing field?
I think they will help. I do think they help. They would help individuals getting more comfortable with learning some of the tools you might be faced. So if you have an interview that you do need to do a hands-on CTF or lab, then you may be comfortable with performing an NMAP scan, for example, or you may be a little more comfortable with even one or two exploits and become familiar with using Kali Linux, versus when you get to the interview part, we have individuals like myself, you know, you freeze up and think, what was that I was supposed to run again? And I don't remember. And other people says, I've done this so many times in this other CTF I did before. I think I know that this is the right answer, or this is the right way to do something. And then of course there's more than one way to solve a problem. So I do think the CTFs help. I wouldn't necessarily say that they should be the only skills to rely on for the career as a penetration tester, but they definitely help with getting your foot in the door and help you get started.
As far as like any kind of technical questions and stuff, you you get and you think that would help people? What type of questions should people be prepared for during a pen test interview?
My answer might be narrow because I've only been on one team. So I've only been in, you know, I've only had one interview myself, and I know the same questions that we ask over and over. And of course, we do elaborate. I've thrown in some new questions myself that they didn't have before. And a few would be, I wasn't prepared for this. I'm thinking, and I don't want to give away our interview questions either in case anybody's listening, because now I need to find someone to fill my seat that has just opened up.
You can be general about it, because one of the things I'd usually advise people is stuff from the OWASP top 10, because a lot of times people are going to ask those questions, even though it may not be a dedicated web app pen testing job. That seems to be one of the questions I see a lot.
Yes. So some very basic network. So the questions would involve being able to have someone ultimately sit in front of a keyboard, and even though they may not necessarily be able to, you know, blow everything out of the water, for a lower level or an entry level or mid level, however you want to call it, for penetration testing, be able to do a basic network scan, understand how to know the difference between things like a reverse shell and a bind shell, and why they're different. Why would we prefer one over the other? Why is one considered, and actually that's a good one, because we occasionally, depending on the person's answer, will ask, you know, an adversary may not necessarily care the difference between a reverse shell and a bind shell, but as a penetration tester, we do. I won't answer why, but that does matter. Also knowing some of the basic, yes, the OWASP top 10, some of the basic concepts for privilege escalation and maybe in pivoting as well. What are the types of data that an adversary would look for that's important to that organization? And that may also, you could have generic answers, but it may benefit to do some research on the company that you're interviewing for to know what type of data is valuable to them. That could vary depending on if it's, you know, financial services, if it's that industry, if it's government, if it's hospital or clinic. Those answers will vary.
Yeah, that's great advice on checking out the company you're interviewing with. And a lot of times hiring managers will be really impressed if you know facts about their company, and it gets to the portion of the interview where they say, do you have any questions? If you can have some pretty good questions and related to the company and different things that they could see that you did your homework, I think they're going to take you a little more serious. So that's great advice.
It's true, because part of this job is also to be a researcher. So research your own company.
So yeah, you'd mentioned too that you got started in, you know, doing a lot of community stuff. So, you know, I'm sure that's something you'd recommend. So for someone getting started out, what are some things you recommend, like community type of activities they should get involved with, and any kind of networking?
Networking is a plus. Even, you know, with myself, I am actually not the greatest at networking socially, just because I do tend to veer a little on the shy side. So when I am at conferences, I end up meeting maybe only two or three people. And it's not because I avoid people, it's just that I'm not as forward with meeting strangers all the time. So it takes a little more effort on my part. But because I met someone at a conference, that is how I ended up getting my resume put up to the top of a list for my job. So I definitely think, you know, getting to know people and meeting them can only benefit you. I have a feeling that the recruiters are overwhelmed with finding the right candidates for certain jobs. So it would only benefit you more to get to know people. That's one thing with getting involved. As far as the community work, I think it really just depends on what personal interests are. I see lots of people that get very involved in CTFs and they love it. And they do end up having teams and groups that they join in for CTFs, whether they be the virtual CTFs now versus the ones that you see at conferences that you see people at tables for 3 days straight and they don't go to sleep. That some people get hooked onto that. I end up, other people, they train, they like to be educators, they like to be teachers. And I do think that we have some of those, and I think we need more. We also have people in the builder community that they want to help with building badges, electronic badges, for example, and soldering and showing other people how to do it, or even just doing it themselves. I like to volunteer. And I think, you know, at one point maybe I'll branch out, but I found something I enjoy doing. So, you know, I volunteered for one village 1 year, and now I get to volunteer at another conference. And I've done that for, I think, four or five years now. And I just, I think with me, I've learned that it's because I enjoy service. I enjoy helping other people. I enjoy contributing. And that's something I've always enjoyed doing. So there are lots of different ways to get involved. I do see other people now, lots of podcasts, journals, articles, lots of blogs, education, training. There are probably way more YouTube videos and how-tos now than I think even when I was a student 5 years ago. There's so much that you can learn online now with CTFs and ethical hacking. There's so many different ways that you can get involved.
Yeah. And I think one of the things too, to share with people, if they're kind of shy, would you think that CTFs may be an easier way for people to get involved than just going out meeting people? Because I know some people that are pretty shy that are able to go into a room and just, you know, do a CTF and it's easier for them to communicate with people than just out, you know, mingling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Wireless CTFs, you know, people can be bound to one small room and they can ask an instructor. There may be a dedicated instructor or not even an instructor, but a volunteer that can give them advice and then eventually branch out, and someone doing a wireless CTF can meet another person or two who may help them out with a challenge or have a piece of fancy fun equipment they might be interested in trying out. So yes, I think CTFs are a great idea. Even if they don't, some people don't like the face-to-face. It may be a bit much and overwhelming. And thankfully, within this past year, there's so many different virtual CTFs now that you can get to know people over chats. And talk about hints and clues. And there was a CTF I dabbled a little bit in not too long ago. And the Slack channel is just full of great people that want to help, and they will reach out. And all you have to do is ask a question. And it's good to get to know them. So yes, CTFs are a great idea.
That's great. You know, one of the things I kind of hope, you know, once things are under control and the pandemic is behind us, I really hope they keep some of the hybrid conferences, because I think it's good to be able to offer some of these conferences, because, you know, not everyone can afford to, you know, like fly to the Philippines for RootCon or something, but you can attend it virtually. So, and there's some people that just for health reasons can't get out of their house. So it would really be great to see it kind of stay hybrid.
You're right. And I think it will. Helps, like you say, make things more accessible for people that can't necessarily, whether it be financial or physical or whatever various reasons that they weren't able to before the pandemic. So then the need is there.
Yeah, and I think for anyone that's wanting to get into speaking, this is during these virtual events, that's the best way to get into speaking, because you don't necessarily have to be in front of a crowd of people. So you kind of get to see if you like it and get used to it. I mean, if someone would have started, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, you could have done enough talks that you're pretty comfortable that maybe you would be able to venture out into public and do one at an actual physical conference.
That's true. Dip your toe in the water a little bit before having to stand in front of a room full of strangers. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're getting down close to the end of our podcast. So is there anything we didn't discuss or something you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think we've covered a lot. I think the last thing I think I would like to share is for anyone looking to get into penetration testing or anyone that's even just curious and interested in the realm of hacking. You belong, you know, if you have the interest, even if you can't do the thing, if you're interested and you're researching and it's something that you want to do, you know, people make space for you. You belong, go to the talks, watch the videos. You know, I found when I first started, there were still so many things I'm interested in, and I end up getting pulled in so many different directions of all these things I want to do and all these things I want to see. And I encourage people to do that. And as in frightening or intimidating or whatever reasons that people tell themselves not to do it, I would suggest do it though, because you don't know what you like until you're exposed to it. You don't know. And you know, I compare it to when I never went diving, I didn't know I loved it because I never did it before. And then when I suddenly learned to go diving and I went into the ocean underwater, and it was a whole different world, and it was fascinating and it was exciting. And you know, try out all of those new different things, even if you're not any good at it. You know, give it a shot, try it, see if you like it. And if you like it, dig into it. And if you don't, move on to the next thing. That's the only other thing I can add.
No, that's a good addition. So really an honor to have you on the show. Great to meet you virtually. Thank you for doing this so much. I don't think you realize how much it's going to help someone once we get this out there. You'll kind of see some of the comments, and I think you'll kind of get to realize how helpful it's been. So thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks everyone for joining, and we'll be having some more episodes coming up soon. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.